Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Hey, how you doing today? It's a kind of cool, cloudy thing happening here in New York City on May 23rd, 2012. But I'm liking it. It's a good time to relax and put on some cozy clothes, make a nice pot of tea. I like organic fair trade varieties. Pour in a little soy milk creamer and sit back and listen to me and my guests talk about my favorite subject and maybe one of your favorite subjects, food. And as you know, on this show, we often link together the environment, people's health, animals. We talk about a lot of different subjects on this show. Today, I just want to make it easy, joyful, peaceful, lovely, because so many people have food issues. And what I like to do is let you know that you don't have to feel guilty about your food. If you choose fresh, organic, mostly locally grown, delicious plant foods, and there are so many things to do with them, and that's all we talk about on this show, there's no guilt. It's good for your body. It's good for the environment. It's delicious. Okay, so let's just spin a lot of joy today. And I'm going to be talking to two very lovely, lovely people, J.C. Cochran and Ray Sikora. And I'm going to read a little bit about them. J.C. Cochran co-founded and served as president of Edge Michigan, the state's largest vegetarian organization, for 7 years. He is a retired fire captain, paramedic, training officer, and has a B.S. in emergency medicine and is certified in the Living Foods Lifestyle. Jim is also a certified fitness instructor and former softball champion all-star. He has been leading life-altering programs on health and the environment for over a decade now. His talks empower people to make informed and lasting changes in their lives. Since retiring from the fire service, Jim has been busy starting and developing several other successful outreach organizations. He co-founded Plant Peace Daily, founded Santa Fe Veg, and co-founded Veg Fund, an international organization which helps vegan activists spread the word through food and other means. And then we have Ray Sikora also, and she's been a spokesperson for animals, the environment, and human rights for over 30 years. Her programs have been changing people's vision of what is possible to create in our lives and in the world. She has worked internationally with participants ranging from teachers, students, and prisoners to businesses and activists. As co-founder of the Institute for Humane Education, Ray created interactive critical thinking tools that are now being used by people around the globe. She holds degrees in cultural anthropology and environmental education from the University of Wisconsin. Ray draws from years of experience to help individuals and groups discover how implementing changes personally, locally, can bring about positive change globally. And she, too, is the co-founder, co-director of Plant Peace Daily and Veg Fund. Welcome to It's All About Food, you two.
Hey, Karen.
Hi, how are you doing? I love reading all this stuff. You two have done, like, so many different wonderful things.
Oh, and we love doing it.
Yeah.
So we're just laughing because you're talking about this chilly weather and put on something cozy, and we're in New Mexico, and we're stripped down as far as we can because it's really hot.
So isn't that crazy?
But that's, I love it.
That's the world we live in. And and there are some places where they're hotter than they typically are and colder than they typically are, and it's never assume anything.
Yeah.
But the weather's been really spectacular the last year in New York and New York City. And, you know, I don't like to say global warming is the cause of it. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Whatever it is, I've enjoyed it, and I've taken advantage of it. It's been very moderate and lovely, and often we have...
We heard you had a long winter.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I was just at my co-op annual meeting yesterday, and they were talking about all the money they saved on fuel over the winter because it was a very mild winter. So it's been really lovely here.
Good.
But it's hot where you are.
We're enjoying it, though.
Yeah. So what's going on? What kind of peace have you been planting lately?
doing our usual 24/7 activism, a little bit of sleep mixed in and lots of eating mixed in and lots of hiking.
Okay, now we don't want you not to get enough sleep. Because you have to be healthy and strong in order to spread this beautiful message.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so where have you been most recently?
Well, we're in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we are busy working to veganize Santa Fe because that's the kind of town we want to live in.
What's that going to take?
Well, we started a group. We've got already 70 members, and we're doing all sorts of education and outreach, and we're going to be doing cooking demos and just the usual fare that we do and whenever we settle into an area.
Yeah, right. We've had some really great film and discussion events. We showed Vegucated. We showed Forks Over Knives. Did we show any other films yet?
Not yet, no.
Yeah, more to come, though.
Well, that's the exciting thing, and I know that you've been doing this for a long time, as I have decades and decades. But there's so much out there now, many cookbooks, and there are more films to show, and the Internet is there 24/7 with all kinds of great information. Does that make it any easier?
Oh, yes. In fact, Ray was just saying the other day that, you know, when we first started in this movement, we thought we knew every single vegan in the world.
Me too.
And now we can't keep up with all the books, the blogs, the websites, the authors. You know, there's just so many things going on.
You know what I think, Karen? Like, I think that it makes it easier, both personally, it makes it easier because you feel like there is sort of this trend toward compassion and healthy eating and caring about other species, like the whole thing, and caring about the environment. There's already a trend going that way, so it makes it, personally, it's nice. It's like, oh, good, you know, our community is gigantic. But also in terms of our work, it makes it easier because they were doing a program and they've already heard some of the information from watching Ellen DeGeneres or one of the other popular places where they're going to hear about this. We're not having to just like plant the first seed all the time.
Yeah. And the thing about change, especially changing our diets and changing our lifestyle, we need to hear the information over and over and over, packaged in many different ways for
exactly.
It to get nourished and grow and finally go from our subconscious to our conscious and enable us to take action. It takes a long time.
Right.
For many people, it does, yeah.
Yeah. So
I think for anyone, when there's new information, you know, at first you hear it, you can't take it all in. It's almost like the information is around the corner. You haven't even walked to the corner yet. So you're on your way, and then eventually you go, oh, yeah, I heard that before 5 times.
Now it comes. Yeah. Well, it's so hard to understand what makes us tick as human beings, but I think so much of it is so ingrained in all of our cells. We have 53 trillion or more cells in our bodies. There's so much fascinating science information about what goes on in our cells all throughout our bodies, not just in our brains, how cells all throughout the body have memory, our organs have memory. There's all kinds of just intense, interesting things that we're at the tip of the iceberg in terms of comprehending. And, you know, when we're babies, we take in all of this environment around us and things become a part of us, really. And so when somebody comes along and says, no, that's not a good thing, you know, we have this 53 trillion community of cells that don't know what to do with that information.
Exactly, exactly. It's like a foreign language. I've often thought that there should be like a travel guide to veganism because it is like this foreign culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's different food, different language. It's just a different culture. And wouldn't it be cool to have like, you know, like the Fodder's Guide to Veganville or something like that?
Don't tell her that. That's your next book.
What is that? Tell us. So what has your approach changed over the last three decades? So what are some of the changes that you've made?
Yeah, I think we can probably answer that separately. We've both been doing this for so long, and with our, we've come from two very different paths. You know, Grace, you've been doing activism and outreach for a long time, and I have, and we have had very different venues and different ways of doing it, and now we've come together, and ours have a lot of overlap now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a way, it's sort of like we brought together those decades, and that's why we wrote our book, Plant Peace Daily, because it was like, ooh, you have all those outreach ideas, I have all these. We can be more than some of our parts, which is great.
Yeah.
And, you know, mine started out, I think it was, when I first started out, it was much more in your face. It was much more, I know the right way to do things, and I don't care how long it took me or how much my experiences led me to where I am, I want you to understand this in 5 minutes, what took me however many years.
You're right.
You know, that's how I used to be, you know, like, how can you not get this in 5 minutes? And now I really realize that everybody has their own path to it. I'm just one little part of their path to it if they come across me, and they're one little part of my path toward learning more about what they do. And it's impossible for someone to get in 5 minutes what took me 56 years of my experiences to get to.
Yep.
And so much more now I do inviting instead of fighting. You know, I invite people to this very joyful possibility that they could feel good physically. They could be making choices, you know, in all of their lifestyle choices, they could be making choices that support animals and the earth, their cultures, their own health. And do it in a way that satisfies, like, whatever it is that they love, you know, fast and wise, or comfort food, or all those things. It's all there now. And so I love inviting people to this possibility. So it has a lot more joy for me now than it used to. You know, it still has the dark parts of knowing what's going on behind closed doors. There's a lot more joy in it now, just inviting people to
I agree with that. That, you know, I know, I understand how people are angry, and there are people that finally have that epiphany and are angry and start where we started so long ago. And the numbers, I can't say the numbers are getting better. You know, as the population grows, we hear how more animals are being killed every year for food. The last thing I heard was 65 billion land animals, I think.
Yeah.
And just gets bigger and bigger. And, of course, our health costs are going up for all these unnecessary, chronic, reversible, preventable diseases if people mm-hmm. would eat healthy. And then, you know, we've got this environment that's not looking very good. and it's really hard to just, like, want to smile. But that's, I really believe that that's the way to do it, invite and not fight. I like that. I might steal that from you.
You can feel it. It's all yours. And, you know, if you think about it, like, think about the community you would want to join. Would you be more attracted to a community of angry or unhealthy people, or would you be more attracted to a community of people who seem really joyful and very grateful for their lives and are strong and healthy? Like, that's much more attractive. Community.
I know what I want. It's what I'm living.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you, JC? What's changed for you?
Well, and you know, a lot I have learned actually in the last 6 years, having lived with Ray, and that is one of the most important things I've learned, is that when you speak with people, rather than presenting your own point of view, to question theirs, you know, and ask them questions about why they take points of view that they do, and just be inquisitive, and you know, they're opening, by opening up the conversation and making them the focus of the conversation, they're much more apt to be agreeable to you and willing to make change.
Now, you're working there in New Mexico. What's your style these days of getting people interested in what you want to talk about, and what are just wondering what are the big bullet points for you when you're talking to people about what's important?
Well, almost always when you know when you're doing a tabling event, people will come up to you, and then in many cases they'll you know, they're open to the idea because they wouldn't have come to your table otherwise. But there are some people who are actually come up to a table, up to your table, and want to be confrontational about
Absolutely.
It. That's when you want to be able to, instead of reacting angrily to somebody who's come to you angry, in an angry fashion, is to turn it around and, you know, question, you know, why it is that they feel that they do. Ray's got some really wonderful stories and success stories of people who've really turned around as a result of just being inquisitive and finding out what it is they what's important to them, and then asking if these things are in alignment with their own personal beliefs.
Isn't it amazing how powerful love and respect can be?
Yeah, we had this woman who came up to our table, and she said, "Oh, I'm kind of a vegetarian." Well, I am a vegetarian, but I eat chicken.
And oh, the feathered vegetable, that's right.
Exactly. And I said, "Oh," I said, "how did you choose chickens as the animals who you would eat?" She said, "Well, you know, chickens." And I said, "Yeah, what do you mean? What about chickens?" And she said, "Well, you know, they're really stupid." And I said, "Oh, I have a really different experience of chickens. You know, that they're not at all stupid. So tell me about your experience of chickens." And she just stopped in her tracks. And she looked at me. She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, you know, what's your experience with chickens?" And she said, "Well, I don't have an experience
yeah.
with chickens." And I said, "Oh," I said, "do you want to hear about some of the chickens who I know?"
No.
And she said, "Sure." And so I told her about some of my favorite chicken friends, and they're not only brilliant, but they're caring, they're loving mothers, they'll give their life for their kids, you know, just like a lot of humans we know. And they're just brilliant. So I told her about some of my favorite chicken friends who I'm close with, and I told her this, and you just saw her face kind of change.
Mm-hmm.
And then she looked at me, and real quiet, she said, "Oh, I guess I don't eat chicken anymore."
Oh.
You know, just the sweetness, you know, that she was even open to it.
Right.
You know, but I just think it's, you know, most people, given the environment to really look in their heart, they don't want to be making violent choices or cruel choices or choices that hurt the environment. So, like, just asking people a few questions, it's really... For me, it's helpful for me because I understand them more. And for them, it gives them an opportunity to kind of clarify for themselves, "Oh, why? I wonder why I really do that." You know, like I was tabling for Earth Day, and a woman came up. I was showing, you know, the Farm to Fridge film, the four-minute one from Mercy for Animals.
Oh, sure.
So I was showing that on a continuous loop, and an older woman came up to the table, and she said, "This is awful. This is awful. We do it the kind way."
Mm.
And I said, "Oh, you know, what is the kind way?" And she said, "Well, they send the women and children into the house, and then they shoot them in the head."
Oh, there you go. That's
you know, and I said, "Oh." I said, "So why, if it's the kind way, why do they have to send the women and children into the house?" And then she couldn't really take it. She did take in that question, and then I think she got it, how maybe it's not the kind way.
Yeah.
And then she kind of kept muttering, "This is awful. We do it the kind way." And I said, "Oh, you know, my family's decided to do it the kind, what we think is the kind way, and so we decided we don't have to kill them unnecessarily. You know, so that's what we've done is our kind way." And then this kind of, she took some literature and then she wandered away and she was still muttering, "We do it the kind way."
Oh, yeah. Well, those were her 53+ trillion cells that were confused and responding because
exactly.
for decades that's what they've been told.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was sitting at lunch today with my partner, Gary. I think we've been together about the same amount of time that you two, about 6 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So we should celebrate some time together with some good food.
I would love
that. And we were just reminiscing about when we were both really young and we used to like to prepare food, and we were not vegetarians a long, long, long time ago. And I remember making rock Cornish hens, and I liked them because they were cute. They were little. And I did not connect the dots at all. I just thought they were miniature versions of this larger thing that we would eat, and it was cute. And it's some people, when they see that, they make the connection ultimately, but it wasn't my time.
Yeah, isn't it like that? It's like, you know, when I was a child, I was just known as the animal lover, you know, in our house, in our community. And one day we're at my aunt's house, and I am making a tongue sandwich.
Tongue.
Like a lunch meat. And so I'm making the sandwich, and my brother says, "Don't eat that, it's tongue." And I said, "No," I said, "it's not really tongue." He said, it's tongue. And I said, "Mom would never feed us tongue." He said, "Go ask her." So I go to my aunt's kitchen, and my mom's in there, and I said, "Mom, what's tongue?" She said, "It's tongue. It's a tongue." I said, "Whose tongue?" Like, I couldn't believe they're feeding us tongue. And then he said, "It's a cow's tongue." I said, "No, I'm eating a tongue." You know, but I can't tell you how many tongue sandwiches I ate before I could hear. I finally heard it, and I was like, "It is. It's tongue. You know, there's no other reason they would call it that."
Yeah. Well, I remember tongue, and I don't know if I ate it or ate many because the thought of it was really repulsive. But then why is it that we accept eating some body parts and not others?
Yeah, right.
It's like just cultural.
You know, I sometimes see that in a advertisement, breast or thigh, and I'm like, okay, that's right out there. That's pretty blatant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not if all your trillions of cells are used to hearing it.
And you know, for almost 38 years of my life, I was eating everything, probably except coffee.
Everyone,
I'm sorry. But, I was 38 years old when I finally woke up and realized there's so much misinformation and there's such a lack of information, of good information out in the world. And that's beginning to change, particularly with social networking now. And I think that may be responsible for the number of vegans having doubled in the last 3 years.
Yeah, I really think so. It's just things. I'm really banking on this internet social networking thing to exponentially make improvements. I mean, we really need. We don't have time on our side, and things need to happen quickly. But I was just reading about smoking recently, and thinking about how long it's taken to get improvements in smoking. So when the Surgeon General in 1964 put out his first report linking smoking with cancer, it's taken 50 years or more to go from half the population smoking to 20% of the population smoking.
All right.
50
mm-hmm.
years.
We're not the brightest species. We're kind of slow learners. It's so funny. I was just working in the Middle East, and I was working with Arabic teachers there and principals on compassionate living and bringing it into the classroom. And one of the principals said to me, "Ray," it was right when we were starting, "Ray, you're not going to be saying that that animals are superior to humans, are you? Because humans are superior."
Mm.
And I said, "Well, I am so open to that idea, but I haven't seen proof of it yet." and then he said, "Well, it's everywhere." And I said, "Well, do you see this pile of trash I have on the stage?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "That came from the beach in Netanya. I collected that off the beach yesterday. And no other species left this trash there. This was all humans leaving plastic and nylon and tar and like just the kinds of trash is amazing. styrofoam. I had a huge mountain of it on the stage. I said, so it's things like this that make it a little bit hard to prove our intelligence. I said, you know, so maybe over these next days, you can find a way to prove to me that humans are intelligent, and you can be open to the idea that other animals are intelligent. He said, okay, Liz.
Okay. Well, why do we have to be better?
Right. Right. And why is intelligence a measure of worth anyway? You know, it's really impossible to measure the intelligence. We were just talking about it today. If you don't share culture and language, you can't measure intelligence. And it's not a measure of worth anyway.
Well, there's so many things that we don't understand about animals. We have so much to learn from them. You know, how do some of the sea animals navigate in the water? How is it that the birds navigate the way they do? And I was recently in Costa Rica, and I am so fascinated by all the life that's there, especially the leafcutter ants, just watching them so focused, and they're communicating on a level that I don't understand. You know, they've got some special Wi-Fi thing going on there.
Exactly. I just did an experiment with them. I was hiking in Utah, and there's this ant expert. His name is E.O. Wilson. And E.O. Wilson says they communicate by chemical trails. And I thought, I think it's more than chemical trails.
Yeah.
I think they have some sort of telepathy. So we were camped in this one spot in Utah, and I put little pieces of bait down, and then one little kind of puddle of water. And where I put it down, I watched what their reactions were, and the ants far away started to move really, really fast, but they had not passed any chemical trail. And they started to go crazy, moving fast, and they all, like, are charging toward the baits. And I thought, wow, look at this. And I just pulled up a chair. I watched them for hours until it got dark to watch what is their communication like with the different hills, the different holes. And they were communicating with each other with no chemical trail for sure.
I'm not an expert about them, but I was told that when you kill the queen ant, they all die.
Oh, I've never read that. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, check that out, because, I mean, that would be extra proof about this telepathy thing. But the point is there are millions of different species out there, and we could be learning so much if we weren't so arrogant.
Exactly, exactly.
So
and there's a thing called zoo pharmacology, and it's about how the animals know how to find the right medicines in the wild. There's a book called Wild Health that's all about it. And now humans are finally going, okay, you know, beyond tribal people who have always known to watch other animals to see what they choose for their diseases. Now other people, other than tribal people, are going, oh, these animals know. They know what plants to eat when they're in labor, when they're sick, when they need minerals. Let's watch them.
Right.
Those dumb animals, you mean?
Yeah, before we destroy them, let's learn something from them. Okay, we just have like less than a minute left, so what do we need to do? We should go to plantpeacedaily.org, read everything there.
Yes, absolutely. Before you do anything else,
we also have our book for free as a PDF on our website. We want people who want to make change in the world get this book and start making some changes.
Okay, where do I find the book?
You go to plantpeacedaily.org and go to our shop. And
sure.
On the shop page, there is a link to the book in PDF form, or you can get it as a Kindle download for 99 cents.
Pretty good.
And you can buy the book online and on Amazon.com as well if you want a hard copy.
Okay, great. Thank you, JC and Ray, for
thank
just
you, Kara.
Seeing you
thanks.
And doing all this love stuff. I love it. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. So guess what we're going to do now? We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to be talking about what I love most, which is delicious food, with Drina Burton, author of the new book, Let Them Eat Vegan. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's all about food. We were just talking about the changes that have gone on over the last few decades, things that are making it easier for people to transition to a healthier plant-based diet, all the tools and books and social networking and online resources. It's really wonderful. But here's something that I didn't say that I've just kind of been thinking about over the last few minutes, and maybe it was talking about those leafcutter ants. I don't know. But I think there's some sort of global consciousness. And as we all learn things, whether we read that information or talk about it with other people, I want to think that we're all moving forward together along some timeline or thought line where we're getting to a better place. And I'll clarify that a little bit more in a little bit, but right now I want to introduce my next guest, Rena Burton, who has written a brand new cookbook, Let Them Eat Vegan, and she is the author of the best-selling vegan cookbooks and an at-home mom to three girls. She's been vegan since 1995, when little was known about eating and cooking vegan. Not long after graduating with her business degree and working in the marketing field, she followed her true passion of writing recipes and cookbooks. And we're going to learn a lot more about Drina and find out about all her blog sites and websites and books and recipes. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Hi, Karen. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I can't believe I haven't talked or met you before, but just like J.C. Corcoran was talking about a little earlier, we used to think we knew all the vegans. And now there are just so many of us, and it's beautiful.
It's grown a lot in the last few years, especially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that must be good for the cookbook world.
I think so, and I noticed that a lot of people that contact me and that use my books, they're not always, you know, completely vegan, but doing their best or transitioning or just making their way to that plant-based diet. So it's become far more accepted to even have that vegan cookbook in your kitchen than
it used
to be.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a scary, ugly word anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So you're a mom, you have three kids, and you have one of them's a little baby, right?
Yeah, well, she's my baby. She just turned three.
Oh, she's a big girl.
Yeah. No, she's my baby. yeah, three girls, 11, 7, and 3. Yeah. Busy.
yeah, we'll talk about kids because it's such an important topic. But I wanted first to clarify a little bit more of this, where I was going a moment ago before I introduced you. It's a little woo-woo-wah-wah, but maybe talking about it, I'll make more sense to myself and everyone else. But I was reading in your book, I'm not exactly sure where it was, but I think those of us who've been doing this vegan thing for a long time, we learn along the way. And so it started out as this kind of boring brown rice and steamed vegetables things. Not that there's anything wrong with brown rice and steamed vegetables. It's a perfect meal many times. But we've definitely improved and expanded on our culinary expertise and variety. And I'm saying we because I think it's sort of in the global consciousness somehow that we're all moving along together. And these changes kind of happen just individually, but also somehow as a group somehow. I'm not quite mm-hmm. sure, but I was reading your book and nodding my head a lot all along the way, going, mm-hmm. yep, I get that. I've been there. Mm-hmm. So,
it's funny. We often, like you say, we have a lot of the similar experiences, especially if you have been eating a vegan diet for a little while, and I agree. I think that people want to see what is so beautiful and exciting about food and try to make it almost an art at times.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, like you said, sometimes the simplest meal of brown rice and some veggies with a quick sauce is just what you need that night. That is, you know, exactly what your body wants and also maybe all you really have the mental energy to prepare. But there is something so exciting and just, you know, fabulous about taking interesting groups of flavors and taking a meal and making it particularly special, maybe just with a sauce or just with a technique, and just to show that, you know, this food is pretty darn exciting and That, I think that's why it's reaching that level, is because we want to communicate that it's not that boring meal that people think it is.
Yeah, well, that's where the trend is going. That's where the excitement is. The color, the variety, it's in plants. It's not in flesh.
That's so true.
It just isn't. I mean, there are so many more varieties of all kinds of crazy plant foods out there, and so many different things that we can do with them, and it's really, really fun. And we certainly are seeing that in your most recent cookbook, and it's different from your previous ones. I have the Eat, Drink, and Be Vegan cookbook, mm-hmm. also very mm-hmm. nice. And you also mentioned in your introduction that eating vegan is so much more than not eating animal foods. Can we talk mm-hmm. about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I think if there's often people are drawn to veganism for different reasons. I was brought to eating vegan from a health perspective, and a lot of people come from an ethical perspective. But I think if you are only concerned about the ethics, you can't serve those ethics very well unless you're nourished well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I don't think that people can stick with eating vegan long if they're not eating a really wholesome whole foods diet. It's just not going to serve their body well. And I sometimes hear, you know, from people that, oh, this is vegan or that's vegan, but it's pure junk.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the point of eating it when it's just basically garbage to your system? It doesn't matter if it's labeled vegan or anything else. So it's far more than just saying that it's vegan. We need to look at what's going to be healthy for us and good for the planet as well, and that will really do so much more to promote veganism when you can be the best ambassador of your body and be healthy.
So I'm thinking of some analogies that are just rushing into my head right now, and I'm thinking, just like in the women's movement, women had to be better than men in certain areas in order to be hired. Just like with people of color, they needed to be better in their field in order to be hired. And so as vegans, we need to know more about nutrition and a variety of other things, because especially years ago, but it still happens today, people really harass you, and most people know nothing about nutrition. And what they learn about nutrition is from advertising and very little else. And so as vegans, in order to defend ourselves, we need to be smarter about food.
It's so true. We're always being challenged. It's like we need to walk around with the food encyclopedias or something and whip to this category of nutrient, this vitamin, and oh, I get vitamin B here and have it at the ready for everyone.
Oh, but really? Yet, we're all like little quasi-dietitians. We have to be.
I know I've absorbed a lot of knowledge over the years, and I'm not a nutritionist or, you know, certified in that capacity, but I certainly know a lot about food and what's nourishing and basic components of what we need to be healthy, and far more than probably a lot of parents. And yet I'm often the one looked at as, you know, as a parent, how are you meeting this need for your child?
Yeah.
I don't question whether another parent is getting fiber for their child or
exactly.
vitamin C or, you know, all the antioxidants they need, but yet I'm very, I know that it would be quick to ask me, someone would be very quick to ask me, where are you getting the protein, of course?
Yeah,
so,
and then, yeah. I mean, there are so many different responses to that favorite
yeah.
question. But people just assume that they're getting the right food, eating whatever diet it is they've been raised eating. And yet, I mean, we know today the standard American diet is life-threatening. It is not health-promoting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's, I think people find it difficult to question their diet, or either, I think it's sort of a two-pronged thing. First, they maybe don't want to question it because it's hard to look at. Because it involves a big commitment to change. Sometimes it's an issue of awareness. Do they know? And once they have that information, then are they actually ready to do something about it? Because it takes some change, and also our food and the way we look at food and our connection to food, it's so rooted in how we grew up and our traditions and our memories, and sometimes we just have to let some of that go and find a new path for ourselves and our families.
Now, I you probably experienced this. Maybe I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to phrase this one, but I think vegans, although we're a very loving, non-judgmental, compassionate group of people, we can be really critical when it comes to ingredients in food because we've become so knowledgeable about diet. And as time has gone on, many vegans, not all though, there are junk food vegans, but many are talking more about whole grains and wheat-free and gluten-free and soy, yes or no, and everybody's got their thing. And so when we're offering recipes to reach the lowest common denominator, it's a little more challenging.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. It's harder than ever. And when I wrote this book, I made a point of offering allergen specifications within the recipes to say wheat-free, gluten-free, soy-free. To me, those were the big ones that
I always tell people there's nothing in this. There's no calories. There's nothing in it. It's just delicious.
Just take a gulp of air. And so, yeah, those things continually come up. And when I was first writing recipes, I never really thought too much about that. I just thought about them being vegan and yummy. And now it's, okay, can I modify this to make it accessible for someone who cannot eat gluten? Because I want it to be. I want people to be able to enjoy the recipe. And so I'll work in the kitchen to try and tweak it. Sometimes it's easier than other times. Sometimes it takes quite a few tests to get that right. But I do want to make it out, you know, I want to make it quite open and approachable for people that they can try just about any recipe in there. I do lots of soy-free options and give people, here's one option with nuts and no soy, and here's the other option with soy and no nuts. So, it's tricky. There's a lot of that now, and perhaps there's some allergies, but I think it's also people trying to just eat a little cleaner and healthier.
Well, I know myself, I want to please everyone. I know where I got that from. I know I know my mom is just like that. She always wants to please everyone and make great food for everyone.
Were we separated at birth?
And
sounds familiar.
And so, you know, as a vegan, I always wanted to veganize everything. And so that meant no dairy, no eggs, of course, no honey. And that wasn't that challenging, although it took time and learning from different people like yourself and other people. We all kind of moved forward. And then, you know, the challenges were added. My niece was diagnosed with celiac disease 2 years ago when she was 4 years old, and so I started working on not using wheat. And every time I eliminate something, I find my repertoire expands.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. It's a real growth in cooking, and all of a sudden it's the whole necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once you can't use something, you start to think outside of the box of how you can make that component of your meal another way, or make that treat or dessert or snack, whatever it is. You just start to think differently. I did myself when one of our daughters was born, and I had to do a little bit of a food elimination. Because she was reacting, when I was breastfeeding, she was having some reactions, and all of a sudden I realized, okay, if I can't use all of these things, what do I now do? And so even in those times, which seem so desperate because all of your favorite things are gone, you start to expand and learn new things, and all of a sudden you have, like you said, a new repertoire.
Right. May I ask, what did you discover what it was that was disturbing her?
See, it's interesting about the things that tend to, we tend to have sensitivities to. It's usually our favorite things, right?
Mm.
it's almost the foods that we're overdoing. And I had it with two of our daughters, and the first one, she was having some sensitivities with citrus and strawberries and wheat at the time. It's very strange because you don't always think that things like citrus or strawberries actually cause reactions, but at certain points they do. And then with our third daughter, I did as well, and I had to cut out quite a bit. It was a little bit restrictive for a while, but again, it was some of the things that I was eating a lot at the end of my pregnancy and loving.
Mm-hmm.
citrus again came up, and I remember I was eating tahini sauce with loaded with just lemon juice, and I could sit and eat that with some like organic tortilla chips, and I would just lap it up.
Oh, I love that.
It was the
tahini
best day ever.
Lemon dressing on anything. Love
right,
it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and it was just a period of time. It seemed like years, but it was really about 5 or 6 weeks, and then I could start to bring back things in that I was kind of eating just far too regularly. And, yeah, so it worked out, but it definitely was, it definitely put me to the task.
It's just interesting the way children will test you.
Oh, it is.
Whether they're aware of it or not, in the womb or out.
That's right.
Okay, so tell me about raising children on healthy food, because this is probably the number one problem we're facing today in the United States. 1 in 3 children now are obese, and it's affecting their performance in school. It's certainly affecting health and health care. Parents don't know how to feed their children.
It's so shocking and saddening, and yet in the past few months you've probably been aware as well, some of the media stories coming out about, you know, is vegan parenting safe, and can we meet our needs, and this, that, and the other. There's so much information out there now to support that it is not just safe, but it's healthy, and it's it helps fend off diseases and actually promotes their health rather than put them at risk for illnesses and diseases and allergies and all kinds of things that a lot of children are going around just feeling not well and maybe not diagnosed with something. And our girls, they have a real appreciation, and I say it a lot, and it sounds so hokey, but they really appreciate good food. They really appreciate real food and good food, and they know the difference between something that's made with flavors and colorings and then mm-hmm. something that's made that's real. And we have been out at times, and they've been offered, you know, popsicles and things that are, of course, vegan,
mm-hmm.
but they're crap.
Mm-hmm.
And they will eat them, and they say it tastes funny. And I say, well, yeah, because it has colors in it, and it has flavors, and you're not used to those things. So toss it out, and I will give you something at home. And they always go for it because they realize that it just doesn't taste very good. And some of their very favorite meals are the most, you know, wholesome things, and they just have an appreciation for it. And I'm not saying they eat everything, because my kids don't eat all of the vegetables I would like them to.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own, you know, preferences and dislikes, but they eat really well, and they are better for it. They are healthy and full of energy, and yeah.
Well, we can just take a two-second moment to scream every time we hear people focusing on the vegan diet and is it healthy enough for children, because we definitely are having this crazy epidemic today with children not eating well, and the focus is in the wrong place.
Mm,
the vegans are not the problem.
Yeah. And as vegan parents, we tend to be the ones that do educate ourselves.
Exactly.
Of course, we are so so concerned about doing the right thing for our child. When you have a child and you look at that baby and you know that you are the one responsible for its well-being and bringing that child up to be a good person, a healthy person, and helping them make good decisions, you want to do everything you can to do the right thing by that child. So as a vegan, I know for myself, especially doing this over 11 years ago with our first daughter, I read and researched and, you know, did everything I could until I felt completely comfortable with what I was doing, but there was nothing that told me that it was not a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's that much more support for feeding our children on this wholesome diet, and yet, you know, the challenges are still out there.
You know, the other thing is, I talked about this on another show recently, because there have been some books coming out about raising children like children are raised in France with an education about food. And I'm not saying that they do everything right in France. They certainly don't. I lived there for 4 years, and just like anywhere, they've got some great things going on and some not great things going on. But one thing that they believe that's important is that children from day one should be educated about food, how to eat properly, and the importance of mealtime and not to be distracted with other things, and quality food. And you know, we don't give our kids credit that they should start with this information just like other things that we teach our children from very young. Somehow we lost this this skill or this need in our culture to educate about food, and as a result, most adults don't know anything about food. So what can they teach their children?
Well, and that's, I think, where it starts, really, and that's the trouble. And I think parents sometimes don't, you know, I know it's scary at times for parents to look at making the changes, but it really is harder to look at than actually doing it. It's easier to do it than you think in your head, because the whole notion of changing your diet and making that transition from the meat and dairy sort of centric way of eating to eating a plant-based diet, it does look daunting, but it really is easier than people think. I hear that from people all the time. Oh, I thought it was going to be much harder. But as a parent, I can see that it's somewhat scary
mm-hmm.
for them. And so it's really easier to stay in that mold and not want your child to know that much about nutrition because the change can be difficult. So there's education that needs to go to the parents before, obviously, the children can get anywhere. And sometimes the kids come home wanting to change the parents, and they're very defensive about it because the change is maybe a little bigger than they want to be.
It's change. It's change. That's all. It's that scary word, change.
Yeah.
We're comfortable, fat and comfortable and sick.
Yeah.
And then there's the other issue. I was talking to Ruby Roth recently. I don't know if you've seen her two children's books.
I know about, I saw lots about her recent book, The Vegan is Love book.
And it's another piece of this thing about not educating our children about food. So, okay, maybe we don't have to give them the gory details about what's going on with animals, but people should know where their food comes from, and we don't. And, you know, hamburgers don't grow in hamburger patches. I remember one child asking him at 5 or 6 years old, where do apples come from? And he said, from Publix, the store. Not realizing it was a tree.
Right.
And, so we need to be educating more about food. And so you're inspiring people to do that. Let's just take a look at this cookbook. This is your fourth cookbook. And was there anything different, your approach or putting this together, since you had already done three before?
Yeah, with this one, I've always cooked from a Whole Foods perspective. When I became vegan, there wasn't a lot of those, you know, substitutes on the market.
Mm-hmm.
And because it just wasn't. It wasn't the time and place. I became vegan before. When I was vegan, there was soy milk in the market, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Was, you know, no almond milk, no coconut milk or any of these extras, and there certainly wasn't things like faux meats, the vegan meats, or vegan cheeses, sour creams, none of that. So my cooking began without those products, and when they came onto the market, I never really started to use them. There was a few that I played around with. And then when I came to writing this book, I really wanted to show people that you don't need to use them. And sure, you can have them on the occasion for, you know, treats or fun, whatever, but that we can cook really delicious things, creamy sauces, you know, decadent desserts, lots of things without having to use the substitutes, and also from a Whole Foods perspective. So even all of the desserts in the book, like cookies and cakes, I use whole grain flours and keep them wheat-free and gluten-free as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just to show people that it can be done and things don't have to use as much sugar as you think or as much oil. And so it doesn't have to be this ultimate crazy, all-out decadent.
Right. Well, it's a really, really nice-looking book. There's some really beautiful pictures in here by
Hannah Kaminsky,
right, mm-hmm. Yeah, I've spoken with her, really great. We just have a few seconds left, so what are the websites people should go to learn more about you and your books?
Oh, okay, great. The my website is plantpoweredkitchen.com, and then I'm also on Facebook, Drina Burton, and Twitter, Drina Burton.
Okay, thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food. I really enjoyed it, and I'm going to dig in more with this cookbook, Let Them Eat Vegan. Looks really yummy.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you so much for joining me. And remember, responsibleeatingandliving.com, that's your source for all good plant food lifestyle things. And have a delicious week.